Blog Talk Radio.
As if I didn't know where I was. Hi, how you doing? Okay, good to know where you are. Good morning, everyone. This is Jeffrey Swartz.
Good morning.
I am a professor of law at Cooley Law School's Tampa Bay campus, here together with my compatriot, Brendan Beery, who is not going to participate a whole lot because of a minor injury. He is also a professor of law at Cooley Law School, Tampa Bay campus. And I'm supposed to say at this point that everything that Brendan says, as little as it will be today. Okay. Okay. Sorry about that. I'm picking on you. I know.
That's all right.
Everything that he says, as little as it will be, and I say, which is overabundance of which there will be, okay, are our thoughts and our thoughts, as usual, our thoughts and our thoughts alone. And they're not necessarily the thought processes or opinions of the administration of Cooley Law School. It's faculty, either individually or at large. And so reserve your words. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning. And, yes, I have a dental issue for over a week now.
That makes it
difficult and painful to talk, which is really an interesting development given our profession.
By the way, everyone, it is not a cold sore.
No. No, I broke a tooth and it cut me up. And
okay, there you go.
It's
always
always
a fun thing. And with us also is the person you expect to be here, and that is our patron, our mentor, our all-around good guy, Hezieris. Good morning, Hezieris. How are you today?
Good morning. Thank you for the accolade. I don't deserve it, but I appreciate it.
Oh, you do. that and much, much more. We are at a point today where there's just so much to talk about. I guess that's not that unique. But a lot of it revolves around, you know, the guy with the orange hair, the orange skin and the semi-blonde hair. You know, he just, what can I tell you? So we're going to start out right off the bat. And I was thinking about a couple things, but I want to talk about E. Jean Carroll, because I know that if there are any Trumpites listening to this, which I doubt seriously there are, but if there are, I want them to get a boatload of E. Jean Carroll, as if they haven't gotten enough already. So that's where I want to start. I want to start with a $10 million judgment the first time around. Then Donald couldn't help himself. He could not help himself. He figured, okay, she's got a judgment. It's going to cost me some money. What do I care? Okay, I'll just keep saying, you know, all kinds of horrible, terrible things about her. And as soon as he started doing that, she filed a new suit on the things that he said after the judgment. And that didn't stop him. He kept saying bad stuff, calling her all kinds of names and impeaching her character. And then they went to trial, and he's upset because we have a thing called collateral estoppel, where a fact has been established before a jury in a civil matter. That fact that has been established can be carried over to an ancillary matter and not relitigated. He was upset. He said, I get to relitigate and show that what I said was true. No, you don't. Because the fact that you sexually assaulted her, the judge calling it just out-and-out rape, you don't get to relitigate. It's a fact. And thus, as a fact, you're collaterally stopped from challenging it. You don't have the right to put on experts to say it isn't true and go after what the other jury decided. You don't get to do that. And so he walks in, and the only thing this jury had to decide in the new case was how much is he going to pay for the second time around. So here we are. He walks into a courtroom, as lawyers do, And they want to try the case over, and the judge says no. So what does Trump do? He goes after the judge, he goes after the system, and he goes after E. Jean Carroll. Last Sunday alone, not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before, he put 34 posts about her up in 1 6-hour span. 34. He is so obsessive, he can't control himself. Well, what happens is now that the E. Jean Carroll's lawyers say, great, more ammunition, and they just start piling this stuff in front of the jury. He can't stop. He's sitting in court, and he is slandering her. He's sitting in the courtroom posting on Truth, very badly named, social, his failing platform. And he continues to slander her throughout the entire trial. He goes after the judge. This is not smart, but goes after the judge. And then at the end of the trial, he wants to testify. And the judge has said, you can't talk about this. 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 All you can talk about is the amount of damages. That's all you can talk about. After 3 minutes, the judge shut him up and told him to get off the stand. And then during closing argument, he throws up his hands and he's gyrating in his seat and he's slamming his hand on the desk, and eventually he picks up and he walks out. Now, this is not like a single person, okay, because he's like three people himself. But, you know, this is like a single person walking out quietly. He walks out with four or five, you know, Secret Service agents. How can the jury not see that this guy is walking out in disgust and throwing up his hands? And then he wonders how he ended up with an $83 million judgment. $83 million. I don't care who you are. I don't care how much you have. $100 million is a friggin' lot of money. And he doesn't have that kind of cash. That's the one thing that everybody that knows his business says. He doesn't have that kind of cash. His wealth is in properties and licenses that pay, but he has incredible overhead. I mean, he has to support Mar-a-Lago, and he's supporting it to the tune of, I don't know, $50, $60 million a year. He has to support his airplane. He has to support his lifestyle. And so he doesn't have that kind of cash. And he's going to have to liquidate a lot of stuff that may be left over after the state of New York takes their $350 million out
mm-hmm.
of it.
Mm-hmm.
$500 million? He doesn't have the cash. He doesn't. And he's not going to be able to pay. His lawyer, who has represented him in New York on both cases, she's very, very talented. But she's one of those belligerent lawyers who really knows the law but pretends not to by making assertions and motions that just cannot be granted. She acts like she's never heard a collateral estoppel and goes out and says, they denied us a fair trial. They didn't let us put our witnesses on. They didn't let us put on our experts. I had two expert witnesses there. This is a denial of due process. Yeah, okay, no. Yeah, no. You learned collateral estoppel when you were in law school. Stop acting like you're an ignoramus. Because you're not. You're just putting on show for one person to make sure your bill gets paid. That's all. So, and E. Jean Carroll is just, she's never going to pay for a meal again for her whole in her whole life. People with that kind of money never pay their bills. You understand that. People with that kind of money never pay for a meal. The owner of the restaurant wants him there or her there to draw in other people, so that check gets picked up. Like athletes never pay for anything ever. They're making $20 million a year, and they pay for nothing. So with all that said, E. Jean Carroll is going to be very wealthy, and obviously there will be a lot of men chasing after her now, okay, because, you know, they want a nurse or a purse, and she's got the purse. So we'll see what happens. I'm going to ask Brendan, have you got 5 or 6 words you want to join in here with?
No, I'm glad you brought up the New York, because I had heard that by his own, you know, and you know, his own through his own lawyers that he had said, Trump, that is, that his cash on hand is about $115 million.
Right.
So that's the that's the top end. So if New York comes in at $350 million, then you're talking, you know, in the ballpark of $450 million. And
he ain't got it.
I don't know what he liquidated.
He
may be back on a Learjet instead of flying around on a 757 here pretty soon. But
he is so unhappy on that Learjet. He absolutely hates that airplane. because he can't stand up because of the 3-inch lifts on his shoes. His head hits the ceiling. he just can't. And he hates it. And when he had to fly around on the Lear because, you know, he needed about, I don't know, how much was it? About $45 million worth of repairs to the 757. Mm-hmm. He had to buy a new engine because when they did the TBO, they realized he needed a new engine. You got to know jet engines for a 757 cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
I promise you they cost a lot of money, okay?
Made by Rolls Royce, right?
I don't know if they use Lycoming or whether they use Rolls Royce. I'm not really sure. They may use General Electric. I'm not really sure. But whatever it is, they cost a lot of money. Okay? You're talking, you know, tens of millions of dollars for a jet engine. And you know, he needed new avionics because his avionics were out of date and he had to put glass in. That's what we call glass as opposed to, you know, dials. He had to, you know, he redid the interior of the plane. He had to paint the plane. He painted it not that much different, but he couldn't have just touched it up. He had to repaint the whole damn thing, okay, because he didn't pay for it. It was paid for from the contributions out of his pack.
Right.
You know, he's got that little note at the bottom when you contribute that we guarantee that 10% of this money will be used for the purpose stated herein. However, the remainder of the money may be used at the discretion of Donald J. Trump or the administrators of the PAC. Wow. You know, I'm going to form a PAC and I'm going to raise about $20 or $30 million for somebody. And I'm going to be George Santos Jr. I'm going to be George Santos Jr., okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yay to you, E. Jean Carroll. Yay to you. I can't remember her name, what her lawyer's name. Yay to both of you. And if he keeps going. By the way, after Friday, E. Jean Carroll has not been seen on Truth Social. The words, that name has not appeared. He finally got the message. Because he knows the next time around it will be $200 million.
Right.
So they get to a number that will shut him up. When he has no money, then he won't shut up because they can't take anything away from him anymore. So we'll see that. Some interesting things happening in the Republican Party, two things in particular. The first one is I label this Nikki on the attack.
Yeah.
And I think that both Brendan and I agree that Nikki is out there getting close to the line of just going full-throated after this guy. And I'm pleased by that. She still won't take the step over. She doesn't want to say that getting an $83 million judgment against you is disqualifying to be president of the United States. Here's the story. See if you agree with this one, Brendan. A If you owe somebody $83 million and you can't pay it, are you open to being blackmailed or bribed by countries who have the money to give you? Why is no one mentioning that?
Right.
Just
I bet Putin has $83 million at his disposal, right?
You know, I can think of a few. Let's see. The Saudis, they're not above bribing people, are they? I mean, they're really not. Okay, the Chinese, are they above bribing people? Ask Ivanka Trump. Let's see. Even Putin, out of his own money, as he is the richest man in the world, some people think he has as much as $1 trillion worth of assets. Okay? Up to $1 trillion. $83 million is pocket change. This is like the quarters that are in the cash drawer for him. Would he come up with $80 million to get to Donald? To get him to drop out of NATO? To abandon Ukraine? To abandon Israel? And destroy NATO in the process? You betcha. Is he susceptible to being bribed? He always was, but is he more susceptible now? What do you think?
That's a good point. And well, you know, his Ivanka and her husband already got their $2 billion from Saudi Arabia, right? So
close
maybe
it's
Donald.
Yeah, but they also got all. But they got about she got about $500 million out of the Chinese. So.
So.
I don't know. All I can tell you is third base. who's on first, what's on second. I think she needs to cross that line. She has to say it's not a question of why the award was made. That's a different story, okay? That is a completely different story. The real issue is, okay, that it's there. And he can't pay, or he's going to lose assets. So he needs money, real hard cash. And are the Saudis prepared to give it to him? They gave $2 billion to his son-in-law. What's $83 million more? It is disqualifying. Hello? Not the only thing he should be disqualified for, but I mean it's there. Let's look at the practical effects. So, Nikki, you're doing good now. You're a wolf in sheep's clothing. I got it. I don't agree with you on anything you talk about, but on policy, but. It would be worth 4 years of you to get rid of him. You really would. It would take four. I would take, if I was given a choice of if Biden's going to lose, and I don't think he is, but let's just assume that he's going to lose. Who do I want him to lose to? Donald Trump or Nikki Haley? I don't like either of them. It's a Hobson's choice. But I would take Nikki Haley over Donald Trump in a heartbeat because Nikki Haley will not throw away the Constitution.
Right. Wouldn't be the end of the
Republic. Do you think women will come and support Nikki from the Republican Party?
As
a woman?
She will lose a great deal of the Trump base. That's why I don't think she can win. If Donald is not on the ballot, the enthusiasm in the Republican Party will dwindle. I love that word, dwindle. Dwindle. I love that word. No, it'll dwindle. And it will be such that I don't think any Republican can win without his base. And I don't think they can win with his base. But she would draw some independence away from Biden. but without full-throated 100% support from the anybody who calls themselves a Republican can't win. So she would lose. But she would be a better third choice than dealing with Donald Trump for four more years and fighting to hold on to our democracy, which he has every intent of destroying. You know, so what do you think about that?
Yeah, what is she, you know, the, I guess the question in my mind is, because she's probably going to lose South Carolina, is what's her long game here? Does she just hold, does she just stay in the race until he gets convicted?
Yes.
And hope she's the last person standing when he does that? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Two yeah. very easy questions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And more than that, she's going to stay in because they're never Trump supporters will keep giving her money
mm-hmm.
and make it a convention. Even though he will control the convention, it will still be a convention. And the hope is, and my belief is, that he will be convicted and I think possibly sentenced before the convention.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that if he is convicted, Chunkin has no choice but to do to him what she would do to any defendant with these serious kind of charges, where he is looking at dying in prison. There is nothing that keeps him from fleeing. You can't let him get on his own airplane and fly to Florida because it will be a nonstop flight to Honduras. And he will sit and run for president from Honduras. He'll campaign over the internet and then say, I'm like MacArthur, I shall return.
Right.
Okay? And he'll wait ashore, you know, at Mar-a-Lago. I have mm-hmm. returned.
Right.
Okay, but more than that, more than his flight risk, okay, is that I think that she will and she can sua sponte find that the 14th Amendment now applies and there is no appeal because now you have been convicted. And I find you are disqualified to be president of the United States under Section 3. And now what does he do? His main complaint is I haven't been convicted of anything. Well, guess what? You now have been. Crimes that led to an insurrection. This is easy pick. This is low-hanging fruit. And then she'll look down at him. There was a judge in, federal judge in Miami. His name was Kehoe. Nice guy, but just hard as nails. And someone got convicted in front of him, and he was going to take him in. He'd look down, and he'd say, partner, you have been convicted, and you're going to go to prison for a very long time. So you might as well start right now. I'm going to remand you to the custody. Okay? Okay, mm-hmm. you might as well start now. Okay, might as well get some credit mm-hmm. for time served. Okay? And he'd take him in. Okay? He'd take him in. And I think Chunkin can look down and say, Mr. Trump, there is no way under the guidelines that you are going to get less than 10 years and probably a lot more. I cannot allow you to walk out of this courtroom. I'm sorry. So please take off your belt. Take off your shoelaces. Take off your necktie. And take off all your jewelry. You know, your watch. Things like that. And go with the marshals. I'm remanding you to custody. And I think she's going to do that. I really do. And because she knows how important it is that she do that, that she send the message, I'm going to treat you like I would treat anybody else who got convicted of crimes for which they would spend the rest of their life in prison. Someone said to me the other day that they feared the reaction of the public. You want to know something? There will be people out there who will act out. Okay, the really crazy of the crazies. The others, the normal MAGA guy, is going to say, okay, that's it for Donald. I'm not going to jail for him. and I'm not going to die for him. I'm just not going to. So I'm going back to work now.
Mm-hmm.
My new job that I got because of the infrastructure bill. You know, the one that I'm making $30 an hour?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going back to work. And now I have health care. But I hate Joe Biden, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay?
Let's go, Brandon.
I just bought a new
right.
Cadillac, but I hate Joe Biden, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. With a 3.3% growth in the gross national product, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
3.3%, and they were expecting 1.4 or something like that.
Right.
Okay, but the economy sucks. Okay, that's getting off on a tangent. I digress. Okay. I think that he goes in, and there will be people who will act out. I understand there will be pockets of violence. But I don't think it's going to be a revolution. I don't think it's going to be a civil war.
No.
After a very short period of time, when some of them start dying, wives are going to tell their husbands, get your ass in here and change the light bulbs. Okay? Okay. So that's kind of the way I see it. I could be wrong.
Right.
God knows I have been. On a rare occasion.
Yeah. Their choices on a Saturday, right? Mow the lawn or participate in another insurrection.
In an insurrection.
Right,
I'm
right.
I'm going to take my rifle and go out and shoot somebody because my grass will wait. Okay? And the wife says, no, it won't. We have company coming tonight. You be home early now. Okay, you
yeah.
come home early.
Okay.
Okay. And don't forget to pick up the milk on your way. Okay. Okay. One more thing involving Trump. She will agree. It's like there isn't enough already.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, two more things. Possibly three. I'll probably think of something else. What's up with the district, the D.C. circuit?
Yeah.
What's up with them? Brendan, where
good question, man. It's a simple legal question. It's easy to resolve. It would take a couple paragraphs, so I have no idea what they're waiting for.
Well, I will say this. It took the 11th Circuit. With concurring opinions, okay, one mm-hmm. concurring opinion, 47 pages to deal with the issue. Now, and what I mean by that is that they wrote an opinion. Mark Meadows made an appeal that he was immune from prosecution because he was doing what the President of the United States told him to do, and therefore he was immune because the President was immune. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that was tried decades ago by two guys by the name of Haldeman and Ehrlichman.
Yeah.
When they were put on trial, they claimed they could not be prosecuted because Richard Nixon told them what to do. And Richard Nixon's right when he says, I'm telling you, when the president does it, it's not illegal. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
No one bought that.
Mm-hmm.
When he said it, nobody bought it, okay? And the court didn't buy it for Haldeman and Ehrlichman in the Watergate case. But this opinion goes far beyond what was written in Haldeman and Ehrlichman's case. This opinion, all the D.C. Circuit has to do is track this opinion so that there is no space for any claim of conflict between these two opinions, thus denying SCOTUS the ability to claim that there is, or Donald to claim, there's a conflict in the decision that must be resolved.
Mm-hmm.
SCOTUS is going to have to take this case because they think that both circuits are wrong, and they're not going to get enough votes to take the case on the basis that the 11th and the D.C. Circuit, the 11th being one of the most conservative circuits in the entire country, were wrong. I mean, you know, like Fonzie, they were wrong. Okay, wrong. Okay. that's just, you know, just not possible. And I think that what this circuit is going to do when they finally rule is they're going to deny a stay. They're going to say the stay is lifted. And that will force Donald to go to the Supreme Court and bypass a motion for a hearing en banc asking for a stay. And SCOTUS can then deny the stay and deny a request to advance the matter on the rocket docket, for a better way to say it, and force him to file a motion for cert. And by the time they get around to considering the cert request, the case will already be in trial. Mm-hmm. Thus, the issue is moot. We'll hear it if he's convicted. We'll hear it on appeal, a direct appeal, or an appeal after the 11th Circuit or the D.C. Circuit says affirmed. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they have got to decide, because every day they don't decide is a day in which the stay is in place, a day in which the trial date is delayed.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be conscious of this. It's the reason why Donald wanted the RNC to declare him to be the presumptive candidate of the Republican Party. Why did he do that? Why did he want that? Why was he mad at Nikki for going out there saying, I'm staying in the race, when he was going to go out there and claim he's the presumptive nominee? Why did that bother him? You got any idea, Brendan? I do, but I want to see if yours agrees with mine. No, I want to see if mine agrees with yours. Why do you think he did that?
I think it's all about this, and saying that if a major party candidate can't be tried, it's his ticket out. Yeah.
He thinks it's his ticket out of being prosecuted before the election by claiming it's election interference. What he doesn't understand that the DOJ policy, there's actually a conflict between whether it's 30 days before the election or 60 days. He's what? 9 months away, 10 months away.
Right.
So, no. But that's what he's going to claim.
Right.
That's what he needed, and Nikki took that away from him, and she did it on purpose because, as you said, she wants to be the last person standing. You can't say last man standing because she ain't a man. Okay, the last person standing. Because if he gets convicted, people will come out of the woodwork. You will see Chris Christie revive his campaign by saying, I told you so. I told you so. I told you so. I'm going to say it a lot because it takes a lot to get around his whole body. Okay, those words. Okay. So he's going to say, I told you so. Okay. So, Circuit. Wake up. I was reading the opinions. Was there three opinions from the 11th Circuit or two? Rosenbaum wrote one. That was Robin Rosenbaum. She's really great, by the way. And then there was the opinion of the court that was written by, Pryor, who's the chief judge of the 11th Circuit. Really conservative guy. Really, really conservative guy. So is Rosenbaum. So interesting. I was reading it. Very interesting. They just attack the use of 28 U.S.C. 1442A1, which finds that a federal officer, I think it was 4281, I think that's what it was. A federal officer is immune from prosecution for things he does in the furtherance of his duties. The problem is, it's actually for 1442A. Okay, so be that as it may. Let's see. SCOTUS and the 14th Amendment. More Donald. amazing. Wow, there he is again. Okay. Okay. By the way, they're looking for volunteers to experience near death with nitrogen gassing.
Oh, God.
Okay. They're looking. They don't want them to die. They just want them to think they're going to die. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that they can have evidence, so the SCOTUS will decide what we know they're all going to decide, right, after this one experiment. No, cruel and unusual. Don't you agree?
Yeah. That's a separate issue. And, so Alabama just put somebody to death using nitrogen gas, and that's the first time any state has tried that. It's just amazing, you know, when states run out of some of the drugs that they use to kill people because drug manufacturers won't sell to them anymore for that purpose.
That's what they're being used for, right?
Yeah, and so they're scrambling for new ways to kill people. In Alabama, it's decided let's just give the guy nitrogen gas. From what I've heard, I wasn't there obviously, but some media people who were there as witnesses indicated that when Alabama says that the guy was going to die peacefully, that did not happen.
Right.
That he was gasping and writhing. And so, yeah, we're going to have an Eighth Amendment issue now with this. But as you and I were talking earlier, yeah, you know.
I don't know how we don't.
And when you think about this and a state doing this, not knowing how it was going to turn out. As Sotomayor, by the way, in a dissent, when the Supreme Court allowed this execution to happen, she dissented along with, I think, two others. And pointed out, this is a guinea pig. This is an experiment. She used those words. And that's what Alabama's doing. And it was. Yeah.
It was. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we did away with the gas chamber when they used to use cyanide, if I recall correctly. Cyanide gas, where the guy who was dying would take a deep breath and hold it.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you take the first breath of the gas, you're gone.
Right.
And they would struggle to hold their breath like they could actually do it long enough to defeat the cyanide gas.
Right.
Because
right.
It was painful.
Mm-hmm.
It was painful. It was horrible death. We did away with that. We did away with the electric chair. We did away with hanging. So what are we left with? Gary Gilmore, the first guy to be executed after, what was it, Pullman versus Georgia? Is that what it was? That ruled the death penalty unconstitutional, and then they brought it back.
Mm-hmm.
And he chose a firing squad.
Yeah, right.
You know, the next thing we're going to see is people who are strapped in a seat with a hood over their head and a mechanism where a revolver goes right up against the person's head and a machine fires the shot and kills him. That's coming. You know that's coming, right? Doesn't
yeah,
take a great
surprised.
Imagination.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. Or we'll bring in some guy with a big machete. One swing and his head's off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could think of 100,000 different ways to kill people. I got an idea. Let's put 6 people in the chamber with the guy and stone him to death. The Bible says that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I told you this when we were talking. I don't deal with the death penalty on a moral basis. My
right.
father did. My father hated the death penalty. But I told him when I was a prosecutor up in Ohio and I was trying a death case, Dad, I don't look at it that way. My job is to enforce the law. End of story. But I don't think it works. I'm against it because it doesn't work. It deters no one. I dare you to go out and find someone who said I was going to kill somebody, but I didn't because I thought I might get the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Find me someone who will say that. I do know when you talk to people on death row, that you ask them, did you think about the death penalty? And their answer was no. I just wanted to off the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. They don't think about, gee, they're going to put me in the election. Because they know that it's 25 years, sometimes more, before they come around to that person's turn. That's what happens. And for $60,000 to $80,000 a year in Florida for 500 people on death row, that's more than you pay. That's $60,000 to $80,000 more than the regular G-pop guy. 80 times, let's just say 60, times 500 people on death row, that's $30 million a year. Just to give them a television set and other comforts, because you can't let them go crazy, because why? You can't execute somebody who's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they're supposed to understand what's happening and understand they're being punished, and this is their punishment. If they don't understand, it's not serving the purpose of punishment, is it? It doesn't work. And it hasn't for decades. And it's just time. It's just time for it to end. I know you have a moral objection to it.
Right. Well, I just think it's I look at it, and it strikes me as the word I used earlier was barbaric.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't work. So all it is a gratuitous act of violence.
Right.
And when we start talking about, you know, gassing people to death, I just look at this and say, what is this? Which justice was it that said it's time to stop tinkering with the machinery of death?
It wasn't Scalia, was it?
No, we'll have to look that up. But
yeah,
you know, that kind of sums it up for me. I mean, it's, you know, a civilized people is not tinkering with this.
Okay.
So yeah, did you find it?
I didn't yet. If you give me one second, I'll have it. Because
right.
I want to know. I actually want to. Okay.
Yeah.
From this day forward, quote. Harry Blackmun announced in 1994, mm-hmm. "I no longer shall tinker with the machinery of death." Blackmun
right.
had voted
right.
to restore the death penalty and even to approve mandatory death sentences. 1994, Harry Blackmun.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Does that help?
The guy who wrote Roe versus Wade, by the way.
Yeah, really.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, be that as it may, that's what he said. So I agree with you.
Yeah.
They keep trying to find new ways to kill people, and this way is just wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. They could get away with it when they stopped people's heart from beating, put them to sleep, and just slowly deny them the mechanisms of life,
mm-hmm.
but this has gone too far.
Yeah.
You stated that Justice Sotomayor had some comments this
mm-hmm.
week. Why don't you tell us who was regards to, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah, she was at a law school giving a talk and said that she was traumatized, I believe is the word she used, that every time that her side lost, that she was very frustrated being on the court. You have to be. You're in a minority of three now out of nine.
Right.
On a court that is methodically marching the country back into the 1800s. As she said, sometimes, you know, I'm getting a little bit tired of hearing the arc of justice quote all the time as almost an excuse for going backwards, right? You know, but of course she trotted out that line that there are setbacks, and that obviously that's true. And that the only way we're going to move back in the other direction is for people to keep trying. But it has got to be, I think, for all of us who care about maintaining the United States as a civilized society, a free society, one that is suited to life in this century. You know, that it is getting to be very difficult to keep your chin up. And that's even she was saying that. So I thought it was interesting that she was so frank about her emotions and what it's like to be on the court right now. Yeah.
She is without any question frustrated and angry. That doesn't mean Kagan isn't. I don't think Jackson has gotten to the point where she can voice frustration because she's only been on the court for, 9 months? But there's no question she is the voice of frustration. And she has always been very vocal about issues before the court. She is, she's like Scalia. She'll go out and talk about anything.
Right.
And say, I didn't prejudice myself. I admire her because you know that I'm just like her in that context. So that everybody knows we teach at the same school. We're on the same faculty. And I've been with the school 13 years now, and 5 of those years I walked around with a bullseye on my back because I was fighting things that other people understandably couldn't because they couldn't lose their living. I could. And so I voice many times the same frustrations as she does, only in a different arena. And I do empathize with her. She is also of a minority. And that also, I think, frustrates her. And I don't know what I would say to her other than you have to keep unplugging. There are issues that you can win. Even if they're not the big ones that you want to win, there are issues that you can win. You are laying a foundation for the next generation, which may be far away and it may be around the corner, of justices that will be deciding cases. And they will look to your dissents and they will look to your comments and they will look to your writings for guidance. So as much as it's frustrating you can't get it done today, you have to think about tomorrow. And it is not thinking about tomorrow that has helped put us where we are. And I go back to 2014 and I say, why, Justice Ginsburg, did you not listen to people and believe that you were immortal and indispensable? Your ego got in the way. And if you hadn't, the worst it would be now is 5-4 with a Chief Justice who is really a swing vote on a lot of issues.
Mm-hmm.
Where would we be if Merrick Garland had been nominated in 2014 or somebody of his ilk? Where would we be right now?
Right.
So you cannot let your ego get in the way. When you're on the Supreme Court, you have to think in practicality. I know you want to stay there for the rest of your life and you think you're indispensable. You are not. And you are so not indispensable that if you die, someone completely the opposite of you can end up in your seat.
Right.
And if you don't believe me, ask Thurgood Marshall.
Right.
Okay? Ask Thurgood Marshall. If you could ask Thurgood Marshall, would he be looking and defending Clarence Thomas? Absolutely not. So just ask Thurgood. He'll tell you. He was in his 80s. He probably should have left too. But he didn't. And we ended up with Clarence Thomas. These are the mistakes these people make because they don't think outside the realm of their own tachas.
Mm-hmm.
You, for those of you who aren't Jewish, you use the word tushy. Okay? Jews say tachas. Okay?
Right.
Right, Hezzy?
Absolutely right.
Okay.
No. For those of us our age, that word worked its way into a very funny bit on All in the Family with Archie Bunker, if you remember that scene.
No, I don't, actually. Please enlighten me.
I'll email you a YouTube clip. That's pretty funny.
Okay, do that. I think it's a good idea. I guess the last thing we can start talking about, and I wanted to get to Fannie Willis and her inability to keep her hands off of her employees. But I'm not going to go there today. You said, what do we do about the Middle East? And I don't know. I mean, people have been trying to figure that out for over 2,000 years, and you're asking me to solve the problem on this show in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Get on it. Get on it.
There is a way to solve the problem. There is a way to solve the problem, but it's not a good way. Okay? You throw all the Israelis into bomb shelters, and you drop a couple of bombs on the entire Middle East, okay, and turn it into a nuclear wasteland. Okay, I know that sounds terrible, but it does solve the problem, doesn't it? Okay, solve the problem. I didn't say it was a good solution, but, if you want a quick solution, that's it. Okay, so there, I talked about it.
There you go.
We can talk about this. And that is that the Republicans in the House are down to 2-vote majority. And that's assuming that the people who have been absent return, like Scalise and a couple of others who have been hospitalized and they are not present and they can't vote. Okay. There's also the problem of Santos's, there's a election coming up, and I think Hezzy can tell us when that's going to be because he lives out in that area. Santos is the guy to replace, the person to replace Santos, I guess, is in a couple of weeks from what I understand. And a Democrat is favored, although it is a swing district. Mm-hmm. But I can't see any Republican surviving George, any attachment to George Santos at all, even if it's an R, like a pirate, R after his name, okay? We have a Senate who is acting responsibly. Maybe not as responsible as I'd like, but responsibly in passing a bill which gives a president the ability to control the border and gives them more money for the border and more judges and more agents and all kinds of things to try to control the border. This is what Republicans asked for.
Mm-hmm.
And limits, if they ever get to a point of an average in a week of more than 5,000 immigrants seeking asylum, the border is shut down at the order of the president. This is what they asked for. And as typical of Republicans in the House, they cannot take yes for an answer because if they take the Senate bill, which also funds Israel and Ukraine, by the way, if they say yes, the issue that Donald Trump tells them they have to have, like I want the economy to crash and there to be a depression because it'll help us in the election, really wants Americans to suffer so he can be president. That's what you call really thinking about it. Okay. Okay, it's one of those things where they can't take yes for an answer. So the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, says, I'm not even going to put it on the floor. It's dead on arrival. And the Senate's just going after him and gnawing at his arms. He's being chewed up alive. And there are people on the Republican side who realize we can't go out there and say this is the Democrats' fault when we said no to the solution that we wanted. How do we defend that in front of the voters? Because I wanted you to feel bad and vote for me because you're suffering? Okay. Mm-hmm. Makes no sense. Okay, and they know that. They literally know that. But Donald is still pushing. And what's going to happen is that some retiring Republicans, and there still are a few that are retiring at the end of their term, are going to say, yes, Democrats, I agree with you. This is the right thing to do. File a motion for discharge, which must be put before the House. And that's the mechanism under which the Speaker is forced to put before the House the bill from the Senate. Not send it to a committee. He must put it before the House. And that's what's going to force that vote. And I think in the end, that bill will be adopted, and Mike Johnson's going to be looking for a new job.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'll just throw him out. And we'll go through this same exercise of division so bad they can't even pick a speaker. Because all they got is a one-vote majority. Any one person votes for Hakeem Jeffries, and he's the Speaker of the House. Even though there are one fewer Democrats, all you need is a couple of Republicans who say, I'm going with these guys. I want to get reelected. I'm in a Democratic district. I'm going with these guys. And now all of a sudden, the House belongs to the Democrats for the remainder of the term. Sounds good to me. How's that sound to you, Brandon?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. As you were talking, I was thinking, the success of Republicans right now, when you look at schemes like this and not being able to take yes for an answer, their success politically depends entirely on Americans not paying attention. Because anybody who's paying attention knows who to blame if the border crisis doesn't get fixed. Right? Anybody who's paying attention knows that the Senate has a bill to fix it, that Biden will be willing to fix it, and that Republicans don't want it fixed. But you have to be paying attention. And that's been a real problem, is, you know, this impulse Americans have if something is going wrong to simply blame the president. And that's just the easy way out. Never considering what the other party's doing, what another branch is doing. Right, and whether the president has any control over it to begin with. So that's depressing. I mean, again, it's so obvious. This is so obvious, right? Trump's asking, or rooting for depression and rooting for a disaster at the border because he wants those issues when those issues could be addressed and fixed.
I was absolutely flabbergasted when I heard him say that.
Mm-hmm.
The economy's terrible. And we should let it fail. We should have a depression. It's good for Republicans. Let Biden be the new Herbert Hoover.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said. Seriously? And people want to elect a guy who would do that to them? They're basically saying, please make me suffer. Hang me on a cross. I want to be a martyr. I want my kids to grow up with no health care. I want them to die in their 40s. How do you do things like that? How do you vote for people who want to do this to you for their own power's sake? Totally lost.
Yeah.
I am totally lost in this. And there's nothing that's ever going to explain it to me to have any rationale whatsoever. People, in my opinion, and this is hard to say, people who truly believe in America, who truly believe in democracy, who truly believe that government can be an agent of good, people who understand the Constitution, who do not want to see this country fail, who hang around with, are friends with, who tolerate those who would undermine our Constitution, betray what they believe. They betray what they truly believe. And that is something that they have to start to understand. I don't care how pleasant they are. I don't care if he's a nice lady who takes care of dogs. I don't care if he's a nice guy who helps people out. If you are rooting for a guy who wants to destroy this country, or if you're if they're rooting for a guy who wants to destroy this country, they are, as Hillary said, deplorable.
Mm-hmm.
They don't deserve to live here. In the old days, we used to say, America, love it or leave it. Well, why don't you start loving it then? Can't stand people who love America. Hates America. And so many of them are rich and live the life of Riley. They don't care about a depression because they got all the cash they need to live their life and have as much fun as they possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
While everybody else lines up for soup and a piece of bread. And the man at the top lives in gold-plated luxury. No, that is not America. Get your act together. Start fighting these people everywhere you can. Don't say argue, don't fight with your fists, but fight them. Tell them they are wrong. Show them why they are wrong. Tell them how they're hurting themselves or they are hurting everybody else around them. They are nothing but Marie Antoinette. Let them eat cake. You cannot be friends with people like this. You can't. You just cannot be friends with people like that. And that's sad, but it's true. That's my editorial for the day.
Amen. There you go.
Excellent.
Okay, Hezzy, thank you for the time, as always.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
We made it through the hour.
We did.
And
absolutely.
A little bit more.
Well,
okay.
Thanks for the insight.
Take care of yourself,
very
Hezzy.
Important.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You do
have
the
a
same.
Great week.
Both of you.
Yep.
Good luck, Brendan.
All righty.
Did you go?
Thanks.
Did you get
okay.
the surgery yet for the teeth?
Yeah, it's all. It just has to heal up now, so and it's gonna take time. So,
okay.
Yep. But,
well, all the best. You take care.
All righty.
Okay.
Thanks, Eddie. Yep. See you next week.
Take care
Thank
of yourself,
you.
Eddie. We'll talk to you soon.
Be well,
okay?
guys.
Yep.
Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Bye bye.
Take care. Bye.
Bye bye.
Well, it doesn't get better than Brendan Beery, Jeffrey Swartz, Brendan Beery, both professors at Cooley Law School. In the Tampa Bay campus. So that's the story there. I was just rechecking to see what was going on. I may have an appointment today, and I'm just not quite sure. Gotta check. So bear with me a moment as I check and find out if I do have an appointment and see where it goes. Bear with me a second. Well, I guess not. Today might be the day. I'm not sure. All right, let me just bear with me one more second. let me just quickly look here. Sorry for the delay because I'm not quite sure if I've got a scheduled appointment that I have to get to and need to find out. One second. Okay, hopefully I'll get this. Okay, hopefully this will get through. And... one more minute. Oh, goodness sakes. All right, let's see if this goes through this time. Okay, I'm just not quite sure what this is. Well, find out a little bit later. That's the bottom line. Okay. one moment here. Just wanted to go over a couple of other issues that have come into play. One second here. Okay, let's look at some of the stuff that's been going on the world stage. And, okay, well, it seems that Israeli commandos disguised as women and medical workers stormed a hospital today in the occupied West Bank, killing three Palestinian militants, the Israeli police and military said. Well, the dramatic raid came as Qatari mediators said a framework to halt the Gaza fighting and for hostage releases was to be relayed to Hamas. So that was the final story. Well, summary is that Israeli undercover agents, some disguised as medical staff, raided a West Bank hospital on Tuesday, that's today, and shot dead three Palestinian militants. And Hamas said on Tuesday it would study a new ceasefire proposal in the war with Israel in Gaza, after Qatar said that efforts to broker a new ceasefire had made good progress. Well, Israel handed over to Palestinian authorities today the bodies of dozens of Palestinians killed by Israeli forces in the Gaza war. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres was set to meet donor nations today after several countries suspended aid to the United Nations Relief WA aid agency following Israeli allegations that some of its workers took part in the October 7 Hamas attacks. Well, the health ministry in Hamas-run Gaza said at least 26,751 people have been killed and 65,636 have been wounded in Israeli strikes on the enclave since October 7. Israeli officials say about 1,140 people were killed in the Hamas-led October 7 attacks in southern Israel. Militant workers took some 250 hostages during the attack, and 132 are still in Gaza, according to Israeli figures. Well, it seems that Biden says he has decided how to respond towards the attack on U.S. troops in Jordan. U.S. President Joe Biden said today that he has decided how to respond to a drone attack that killed U.S. service members in Jordan, but did not elaborate. Biden, speaking to reporters as he left the White House on a campaign trip to Florida, also said the United States does not need a wider war in the Middle East. Israeli forces also stormed the Al-Amal Hospital in Gaza's Han Yunus, says the Palestinian Red Crescent. Israeli forces have stormed Al-Amal Hospital in Gaza's Han Yunus, asking displaced people and crew to evacuate at gunpoint, the Palestinian Crescent had said. Well, Houthis are ready for a long-term confrontation with the United States and the United Kingdom, says the group commander. It seems that Yemen's Houthis are ready for a, quote, long-term confrontation, end quote, with the United States and the United Kingdom, the commander of the Houthi forces, Mohammed al-Atifi, said in a statement today. Quote, we are prepared for a long-term confrontation with the forces of tyranny. The Americans and the British and those who coordinated with them must realize the power of the sovereign Yemeni decision and that there is no debate or dispute over it, he said. Then we find out that Palestinians in Lebanon protest the halt in funding to the United Nations RWA. Well, the dozens demonstrated today outside the United Nations RWA office in Beirut against several countries' decision to suspend funding for the body after Israel charged some staff participation in Hamas's October 7th attack. Quote, we are afraid for the future of UNRWA, said Palestinian refugee Abu Mohammed, 65, who attended the protest organized by Hamas in Lebanon. quote, all our children study in UNRWA schools, and most of our medical staff, or medical care rather, is covered by the agency, he said, urging countries to, quote, reverse their decision, end quote. Well, the suspension of aid would be catastrophic from a social and humanitarian perspective, he added. Well, Hamas said today it would study a new ceasefire proposal in the war with Israel in Gaza. The Hamas position is known, says Franz Vancat correspondent in Jerusalem, Iris Makler. Quote, they want a complete end to the fighting. They want Israel to withdraw from the Gaza Strip, for them to remain in power, and only then will there be a release of hostages. But, quote, that is not what's on offer, end quote, she said. Well, watch, you can watch the video on this, or commentary on this, by going to France 24, France24.com. Well, Palestinian Islamic Jihad says it will not engage in hostage deal without a ceasefire. The Palestinian militant group Islamic Jihad will not engage in any agreements regarding Israeli hostages without ensuring a comprehensive ceasefire and the withdrawal of Israeli forces from the Gaza Strip, the group's Secretary General Ziad al-Nahala said in a statement today. Well, Netanyahu says that Israel won't withdraw from Gaza or free Palestinians in administrative detention. Well, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said today that Israel would not withdraw forces from the Gaza Strip or free thousands of Palestinian security prisoners, pushing back against media reports on some conditions of a possible truce deal with Hamas. In remarks aired by Israeli TV, Netanyahu added, quote, we will not end this war short of achieving all of its objectives. And that means eliminating Hamas, returning all of our hostages, and ensuring that Gaza will no longer pose a threat to Israel, end quote. Well, fighting is worsening around the main Gaza hospital, says the World Health Organization. Well, fighting is intensifying around Gaza's largest hospital, still in service, and it faces operational collapse if more supplies cannot reach it, the World Health Organization, WHO, said today. Well, the Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, central Gaza, is only minimally functional and is surrounded by Israeli military, the United Nations has said. Situation around Nasser has only gotten worse. The shooting, fighting around the difficulty of access for people to reach Nasser, or the difficulty for leaving, World Health Organization spokesperson Christian Lindmeier told a Geneva briefing. So the hospital is sheltering thousands of displaced people, as well as medics and patients. Russia is calling for an investigation into allegations against the UNRWA staff, the UNRWA staff. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said today that allegations that some staff from the UNRWA were involved in the October 7 attack on Israel should be investigated. Aid groups are slamming the suspension of funding for United Nations agency in Gaza. Seems that aid groups have condemned a decision by several countries to suspend funding for the United Nations Palestinian Refugee Agency, UNRWA, pointing to a worsening humanitarian catastrophe and, quote, looming famine, end quote, in Gaza. The two dozen top charities, including Oxfam and Save the Children, stressed the United Nations Relief and Works Agency was the main provider of aid to millions of Palestinians in Gaza and the wider Middle East. Quote, the suspension of funding by donor states will impact life-saving assistance to over 2 million civilians, over half of whom are children, the non-governmental organization said in a joint statement. Well, the population faces starvation, looming famine, and an outbreak of disease under Israel's continued indiscriminate bombardment and deliberate deprivation of aid in Gaza, quote, unquote. So the far right threatens to quit the Israeli government over any attempt at a Gaza hostage deal. seems that a far-right partner in Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's coalition threatened today to quit the government over any attempt to enter, quote, a reckless, end quote, deal with Hamas to retrieve hostages held by the Palestinian militants. Quote, reckless deal dismantling the government, end quote, Itamar Ben-Gvir of the Jewish Power Party posted on X amid media reports that Israel was considering a long-term halt. Sorry. A long-term halt brokered by Qatar and Egypt to its offensive against Hamas in the Gaza Strip. The health ministry in the Hamas-run Gaza says that the war death toll now stands at 26,751. The health ministry in Hamas-run Gaza says at least 26,751 people have been killed. One second. Sorry. So 26,751 people have been killed in the Palestinian territory since the start of the Israel-Hamas war. A ministry spokesman said that some 65,636 people have been wounded since October 7th, when the war broke out. Also, the youngest U.S. soldier has been killed in Jordan, in a Jordan drone attack, was 23 years of age. The U.S. military has released the names of three Army Reserve soldiers killed in Sunday's drone attack by Iran-backed militants in Jordan, with the youngest victim just 23 years old. The attack also wounded more than 40 soldiers, 40 troops rather, when the drone slammed into housing units early in the morning. Washington is trying to determine exactly why the nearly 350 troops at the base in Jordan, known as Tower 22, were unable to stop the drone. Bear with me a moment. Sorry about that. Well, two officials speaking on condition of anonymity said a U.S. drone was approaching the base around the same time the attack drone was incoming. One moment here. One of the officials said that the attack drone was also flying low, factors that may have contributed to its being missed by base defenses. Moscow is also calling for calm after a deadly attack on U.S. base in Jordan. The Kremlin today called for de-escalation of tensions in the Middle East after Washington vowed to respond to an attack in Jordan that left three U.S. military servicemen dead. Quote, in our view, the overall level of tension is very alarming, and to the contrary, now is the time for steps to de-escalate tensions, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters. The White House vowed a, quote, very consequential response to the drone attack on a base in Jordan that killed three American troops, with President Joe Biden blaming Iran-backed militants. Hamas has received a ceasefire proposal after Paris talks, says Chief Haniyeh. Well, it seems Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh today said that the group had received a ceasefire proposal, but put forward after talks in Paris, and would study it, adding that he would visit Cairo for discussions on the plan. Haniyeh said that the group's priority was to end Israel's military offensive and a full pullout of Israeli forces from Gaza. Well, Israel hands over bodies of Palestinians killed in Gaza. Israel has handed over to Palestinian authorities the bodies of dozens of Palestinians killed in Gaza in recent weeks, health officials in the Palestinian enclave said. The bodies, which had been held in Israel, were handed over through the Israeli-controlled Kerem Shalom crossing and will be buried in mass graves in the city of Rafah in the south of the Gaza Strip, the officials said. The health ministry in Gaza did not immediately say how many bodies had been handed over. Closed-circuit TV footage shows undercover Israeli troops carried out the West Bank hospital raid. Some details have emerged of the raid in a West Bank hospital in which three alleged Palestinian militants were killed, with Israeli and Palestinian sources saying that the operation was carried out by commandos disguised as civilians and staff. Sources from inside Jenin's Ibn Sina Hospital quoted by Palestinian news agency Wafa, said an Israeli special forces unit infiltrated the hospital, disguised as nurses and civilians, before heading to the third floor and killing three young men using silenced pistols. Closed circuit TV circulated online appeared to show around a dozen undercover troops, including three in women's garb and two dressed in medical staff, pacing through a hospital corridor with rifles. Israel's police minister reposted the clip on X. Well, Israel's border police confirmed that three Palestinians were killed in an operation by the force's undercover unit. Hamas claimed one of the dead in Ibn Sina Hospital as its member. The allied faction, Islamic Jihad, claimed the other two, saying they were brothers. Ibn Sina said one of the brothers had been receiving treatment for an injury that paralyzed his legs. The Israeli military identified one of the men as Mohammed Zalameh, 27, from Jenin, who it said had contacts with Hamas headquarters abroad and was planning a raid attack inspired by the October 7th massacre. Well, Qatar is touting a Gaza truce proposal. Israeli and Hamas officials are less optimistic. It seems that a framework to hold the Gaza fighting and for hostage releases is to be relayed to Hamas. Mediator Qatar said today, actually yesterday, the latest efforts to broker a new truce. Well, the move comes after CIA Chief William Burns met top Israeli, Egyptian, and Qatari officials in Paris on Sunday. Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani, who attended the talk, said, quote, good progress, end quote, had been made, and the parties were hoping, quote, hoping to relay this proposal to Hamas and to get them to a place where they engage positively and constructively in the process, end quote. However, the tone from Israeli and Hamas sources was less optimistic, quote, end quote, cautioned France Van Katz, Jerusalem correspondent Iris Makla. Well, the Arab American snub for the team Biden signals trouble ahead of elections. Arab American anger over Joe Biden's Israel policy could cost him dearly in November's United States presidential election vote, as a community with electoral influence in key swing states turns against him. Over the weekend, the Democratic incumbent's campaign manager traveled to Dearborn, Michigan, home of the largest concentration of Arab Americans in the United States, and was snubbed by a group of a dozen or so officials, including the Detroit suburb's mayor. Well, Biden has asked Congress for billions of dollars in additional military aid to Israel, and his government has voted multiple United Nations Security Council calls for a ceasefire in the conflict, leaving many Muslim and people of Middle Eastern heritage feeling betrayed by the Democratic Party. Quote, when elected officials view the atrocities in Gaza only as an electoral problem, they reduce our indescribable pain into a political calculation, Mayor Abdullah Hamoud wrote on X about why he chose not to meet Julie Chavez Rodriguez. And then Israel kills three gunmen in a raid on West Bank Hospital. The Israeli army says its forces have killed three Palestinian gunmen in a hospital in the occupied West Bank, adding that one had been suspected of planning an imminent attack by Hamas's October 7 cross-border rampages from the Gaza Strip. Well, the army statement identified the main target of the overnight raid on Ibn Sina Hospital in the city of Jenin as a member of the Islamist militant movement, and the other two as members of Islamic Jihad and a local group of gunmen. There was no immediate Palestinian confirmation of their identities. The Voice of Palestine Radio reported the killing of three Palestinians in the hospital. Yesterday's key development seemed that the United States Secretary of State Antony Blinken voiced, quote, real hope, end quote, for a deal to halt fighting in Gaza in exchange for liberating hostages a day after top Israeli and Egyptian security officials met with CIA Chief Bill Burns and Qatari Premier Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani for talks in Paris. Well, Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant said on Monday that a quarter of Hamas fighters have been killed and at least another quarter have been wounded, but that the war against Hamas, quote, will take months, end quote. Austria and Romania joined the list of nations that have paused funding for UNRWA UNRWA over allegations that staff were involved in the October 7 attack by Hamas. An Israeli intelligence dossier, Austria and Romania joined the list of nations that have paused funding to UNRWA over allegations that staff was involved in the October 7 attack by Hamas. An Israeli intelligence dossier that prompted a cascade of countries to hold funding over the weekend included allegations that staff took part in abductions and killings. UNRWA warned that it will not be able to continue operations in Gaza past February if funding is not resumed. Well, Gaza's health ministry collects data from the enclave's hospitals and the Palestinian Red Crescent. The health ministry does not report how Palestinians were killed, whether from Israeli airstrikes and artillery barrages or errant Palestinian rocket fire. It describes all casualties as victims of, quote, Israeli aggression, end quote. The ministry also does not distinguish between civilians and combatants. Throughout four wars and numerous skirmishes between Israel and Hamas, United Nations agencies have cited the Hamas-run health ministry's death tolls in regular reports. The International Committee of the Red Cross and Palestinian Red Crescent also used the numbers. In the aftermath of war, the United Nations Humanitarian Office has published final death tolls based on its own research into medical records. The United Nations counts have largely been consistent with the Gaza Health Ministry's with small discrepancies. It seems that Israel has ordered residents to leave the area of Khan Yunis, including a Nasser hospital. Palestinians are fleeing Khan Yunis following evacuation orders from the Israeli military. Israel ordered residents to leave a downtown area of the city that includes Nasser Hospital, the city's main medical facility. So footage shared by the World Health Organization, WHO, shows a packed hospital with patients being treated on the ground. Allison Sargent has more on the story, which we haven't gotten. But Israeli protesters block aid trucks into the war-torn Gaza. It seems that Israeli protesters blocked humanitarian aid trucks from entering the war-torn Gaza Strip on Sunday, forcing the lorries, the trucks, to turn around at a crossing with the Palestinian territory. Hundreds gathered in the latest protests at the Kerem Shalom crossing, despite the army saying in a statement it had declared the area, quote, a closed military zone, end quote. Well, the demonstrators, some affiliated with relatives of hostages held in Gaza, have assembled there for days to protest aid coming to the territory that United Nations officials say is on the brink of catastrophe. Quote, we don't want anything to get into Gaza because everything that goes to Gaza goes directly to the terrorists, and we don't want that, protester Shoshi Slikowski advised Agence France Press. Well, the United States says that its Israel policy is unchanged after a report on leveraging a weapon sales. The White House said on Sunday there was no change in its Israeli policy after NBC News reported that discussing using weapon sales to Israel as leverage to convince the Israeli government to scale back its military assault in Gaza. quote, Israel has a right and obligation to defend itself against the threat of Hamas while abiding by international humanitarian law and protecting civilian lives, and we remain committed to support Israel in its fight against Hamas. We have done so since October 7th and will continue to. There has not been a change in our policy, end quote, a spokesperson for the White House National Security Council had said. Well, the United States, Israel, Egypt, Qatar officials in Paris for the Gaza talks say that sources are close to participants. The head of the United States Central Intelligence Agency, as well as top Egyptian, Qatari, and Israeli officials, were communicating in Paris on Sunday to seek a ceasefire in Gaza. Officials close to the participants said, and French authorities were also in touch with these four countries with the aim of negotiating a halt to hostilities between Israel and the Palestinian group Hamas ruling the territory, the sources had said. Okay. Well, Turkey is urging a reconsideration of funding suspension to UNRWA. Turkey is concerned by the decision of some countries to suspend funding for the United Nations Agency for Palestinians and urges them to reconsider their move, the Turkish Foreign Ministry said on Sunday. In a statement, the ministry said that the suspension of funding following allegations by Israel that a dozen of its 13,000 in Gaza were involved in Palestinian militant group Hamas's October 7 attack on Israel primarily harmed Palestinian civilians. Quote, working under very difficult conditions, UNRWA meets the vital needs of millions of Palestinian refugees. Since October 7, more than 150 UNRWA personnel have been killed by Israel in Gaza, it added. Well, France has suspended funding to UNRWA. France's foreign ministry said on Sunday it was halting funding to UNRWA, although no funding had yet been earmarked for that period. France will decide on funding, quote, when the time comes, end quote, the ministry said, citing the, quote, exceptionally grave, end quote, allegations. Well, nations pausing United Nations Gaza funding could be violating genocide convention, say experts. A United Nations expert warned on Sunday that countries defunding the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, were breaching a court order to provide effective aid in Gaza and would be violating the International Genocide Convention. Francesca Albanese, the United Nations Special Rapporteur for the occupied Palestinian territories, warned the decision to pause funding for UNRWA, quote, overtly defies, end quote, the order by the International Court of Justice to allow effective humanitarian assistance, quote, unquote, to reach Gazans. Quote, this will entail legal responsibilities or the demise of the international legal system, end quote, she wrote on X. Well, Hamas, more Palestinians are displaced as Israel battles Hamas in South Gaza. Well, medical facilities are at risk of collapse in Khan Yunis, the southern Gaza city, now at the focus of Israel's offensive. Gaza's Hamas-run health ministry warned on Sunday, as fighting raged across the Palestinian enclave. Residents said that Israeli planes and tanks also pounded areas in Gaza City to the north, where Israel was slowly been pulling out troops. And the fighting could be heard in the nearby cities of Beit Lahia and Jabalia near Gaza City. So that's what's going on there. Bear with me a moment. One second. This is the latest information within the last hour. Israel and Hamas updates the United Nations chief to meet major UNRWA donors. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres is set to meet major donors to the Palestinian Refugee Agency that has come under strain amid allegations members of its staff were involved in the October 7 attacks. where the United Nations chief will meet UNRWA donors in New York amid fears of funding shortages. Israeli undercover agents raid hospital in occupied West Bank, killing three. And Hamas says it is examining the proposal for a Gaza peace. Well, about an hour ago, Netanyahu says no Gaza withdrawal without a total victory over Hamas. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said today that Israel would not withdraw its forces from Gaza or free thousands of Palestinians held in Israeli prisons. The statement came amid reports from Qatar that, quote, progress, end quote, had been made on negotiating a ceasefire agreement. Well, representatives from the United States, Israel, Qatar, and Egypt held talks in recent days on a potential deal for a temporary halt to fighting in Gaza and the release of hostages held by Hamas militants. Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh said he was examining, quote, unquote, the proposal, but said the priority for the military group would be the, quote, full withdrawal of Israel's forces from Gaza. Quote, we will not end this war short of achieving all of its objectives. That means eliminating Hamas, returning all of our hostages, and ensuring that Gaza will no longer pose a threat to Israel, Netanyahu said on Israeli TV. Quote, we will not compromise on anything less than total victory, end quote. Well, Hamas militants kidnapped around 250 people from southern Israel during its terror attack on October 7. A ceasefire deal in November saw the release of more than 100 hostages, mostly women and children, in exchange for 240 Palestinian prisoners. Hamas, which is designated as a terrorist organization by the United States, Germany, Israel, and other governments, is still holding around 130 hostages. Okay. One second. All right. One second. About 2 hours ago, a group of major charities, including Oxfam and Save the Children, have signed the decision by 12 countries to suspend their funding of the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees after Israel accused several of its members of being involved in the October 7 attacks by Hamas. Quote, the suspension of funding by donor states will impact life-saving assistance to over 2 million civilians, over half of whom are children, the NGO said in a joint statement. The population faces starvation, looming famine, and an outbreak of disease under Israel's continued, quote, indiscriminate bombardment, end quote, and deliberate deprivation of aid in Gaza, the statement had said. Well, the charities pointed out that 152 UNRWA staff have already been killed by Israel's military strikes and 145 of the United Nations facilities had been damaged. Well, quote, if the funding suspension are not reversed, we may see a complete collapse of the already restricted humanitarian response in Gaza, the charity said, adding a call for the states to reverse these funding decisions. The World Health Organization is now saying that the row over UNRWA is a distraction from the crisis in Gaza. Following the decision by several major Western states to suspend their funding for the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, the United Nations Health Agency, the World Health Organization, WHO, has urged donors not to be distracted, quote, unquote. Quote, criminal activity can never go unpunished, end quote, World Health Organization spokesman Christian Lindemeyer said at a brief a media briefing in Geneva, quote, but the discussion is a distraction from what's really going on every day, every hour, every minute in Gaza. It's a distraction from preventing electricity to come into Gaza, he said. Quote, it's also a distraction from the continuous shelling of an entire population, even in areas that just moments before had been designated as safe areas. It's a distraction from attacking shelters, schools, hospitals, he added. At least 12 countries, including Germany and the United States, suspended their funding for the agency after Israel accused several of its members of having been involved in the October 7 Hamas attacks that killed over 1,100 people. Israel's subsequent operations in Gaza have left more than 26,700 people dead. according to the Hamas-run health ministry, which has said most of those killed were women and children. The offensive has also destroyed or put out of operation much of the enclave's infrastructure, including United Nations-run health centers. Quote, we appeal to donors not to suspend their funding to UNRWA at this very critical moment. It will only hurt the people of Gaza who desperately need support, Lynn Beyer said, citing World Health Organization Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. Well, Hamas says it is examining a Paris proposal for a Gaza truce. Well, Palestinian militant group Hamas said on Tuesday that it was examining a, quote, a truce proposal thrashed out in Paris over the weekend that aims to halt the war in Gaza. The proposal was a result of discussions in the French capital on Sunday involving CIA Chief William Burns and top Israeli, Egyptian, and Qatari officials. According to Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani, whose government helped broker a previous truce in November and who attended the talks, the plan proposes a phased truce that would see women and children being held as hostages released first, with aid entering Gaza. It is hoped that an initial deal might then lead to a permanent ceasefire, with Sheikh Mohammed saying that, quote, good progress, end quote, had been made. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken expressed hope for a deal, telling reporters that, quote, very important and there is some real hope going forward. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office called the talks constructive, quote unquote, but pointed to, quote, significant gaps, which the parties will continue to discuss. In a statement published on Telegram, Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh confirmed that, to quote, the movement, end quote, had received the so-called Paris proposal and was, quote, in the process of examining it and delivering its responses. Well, Hamas is an Islamist group that's considered a terrorist organization by the United States and the European Union, as well as some Arab states. I guess that's where we are. Let me just see if there's anything else that's come about. Yes, at least 12 donor countries have halted funding so far, including the European Union members of Germany, France, the Netherlands, Italy, Finland, and Austria. The European Union has not suspended aid, and its disbursement isn't scheduled until the end of February. The European Commission, the European Union's executive body, said it expects UNRWA to agree to a review by European Union-appointed independent experts. The European Union is the third biggest donor to UNRWA after the United States and Germany, both of whom temporarily suspended funding to the agency following the allegations. A United Nations spokesperson said that the 13,000 UNRWA employees in Gaza are continuing to work as the war grinds on, including helping over 1 million people in overcrowded UNRWA shelters. At least 26,637 people have been killed and 65,387 wounded in Gaza since October 7, according to the health ministry in Hamas-ruled Gaza. The donors who suspended UNRWA funding are among the countries that designate Hamas as a terrorist organization. One second. And something on the positive side of things. Could large heat pumps revolutionize how we warm our homes? In the German city of Mannheim, heats thousands of homes using ice-cold water, gaining ground around the world. Tim Schauenberg, a Deutsche Welle reporter, took to the Rhine to find out how it works. Standing in his swimming trunks on the banks of Germany's Rhine River in the middle of January, he dipped his toes in the icy water. He says, I'm not an all-weather swimmer, and the wind is not only cooling the already freezing air, it's also making me question my own resolve, he said. on my journey to this point, experiencing the cold water, had felt relevant to understanding what I have to, or what I've come to explore, which is how it's possible to heat thousands of homes with a cold river. It now feels like less of a necessity, but it's too late to turn back. So, his venture into the frigid water, one ginger step at a time. Once submerged, his whole body tingles as he waits for the endorphins that he's heard will kick in to actually do so. But they remain absent, leaving him in pain rather than joy, and to keep his dip in the wintry water short. At least now I know exactly how cold the river is. Looking across to the other side as he dries himself off and encourages his toes to thaw, it seems unimaginable that 3,500 apartments over there are heated with the same water. Yet they are, via a giant power plant operated by a municipal energy supplier, MVV. A short time later, Felix Hack, project manager at MVV, showed him how the complex, around the complex. He says, millions of liters of water flow through the Rhine, Hack explained, adding that it contains enough thermal energy to heat Mannheim of winter. It's now 6 or 7 degrees Celsius. It's 100, that's 44 degrees Fahrenheit. So physically, there is still enough heat in it. Now, Mannheim still generates most of its electricity and heat from coal, which is particularly harmful to the climate. Long term, though, the city is planning to shift to a mix of geothermal energy and heat from both waste and incineration and the river. Now, the river heat pump started operating there in 2023 and is, according to MVV, currently the largest in Germany. Against a backdrop of smoke billowing from the coal-fired power station chimney, Hack leads me to a sparkling hall with an aluminum facade. Inside, the noise is thunderous. The heat pump, which is the size of a truck, is running at full speed to pump 211 gallons of water every second. The river heat pumps, how do they work? The Mannheim River heat pump essentially works like a conventional heat pump that uses heat from the air or the ground. In this case, it's much bigger and the source is the river. Well, the cold water turns a rapidly evaporating refrigerator into a gaseous state. The gas expands, an electric pump compresses it, generating heat. The process is comparable to a bicycle pump where the valve is kept closed, though pumping continues. Well, the pump gets hot and the heat generated is used to warm water to 99 degrees Celsius, that's 210 degrees Fahrenheit, before it's fed into the grid. Well, the river heat pump has a share of just 3% in the district heating network, but Hack says it's only the beginning. We want 50,000 households to be supplied with heat from river water, he explained. Two additional machines are already being water heat pumps, have also been commissioned or are planned in Berlin, Hamburg, Stuttgart, and Rosenheim in Bavaria. Well, more supply than demand. Since heat in buildings and industry consumes by far the most energy worldwide, 72% of demand is met with fossil fuels. According to the International Energy Agency, large and small heat pumps combined could prevent as many emissions by 2030 as all the cars in Europe consume per year. Currently, 15% of buildings in Germany are supplied with district heating, but by 2045, large heat pumps, including those that run on thermal energy from wastewater, industrial waste heat, and geothermal energy, could generate some 70%, largely replacing coal, oil, and natural gas. Fabian Ahrens from Germany's Fraunhofer Research Institute for Energy Infrastructure and Geothermal Systems sees the potential of these large-scale pumps. Ahrens co-authored a study highlighting the high volume of environmental and waste heat available for use by heat pumps in Germany, which showed that that supply far outstrips demand for buildings and industrial processes. Well, Scandinavian countries have been relied on this technology for some time already. In the Swedish capital of Stockholm, about 90,000 apartments have been supplied with heat from industrial wastewater for years. In the southern Norwegian town of Drammen, more than half of the 103,000 residents heat their homes with thermal energy from the ice-cold fjord. Are there risks to the river? But since heat extracted from the Rhine is returned to its colder after the pumping process, the technology is not without implications for the environment. And he said the small quantities of water currently used in Mannheim mean that the river temperature only changes minimally. But Ahrens cautioned that it could become more difficult if all cities and industrial plants along the Rhine were to use the river heat. Fortunately, most of our waters are overheated at the moment due to climate change, so it's beneficial up to a point, said Ahrens, although heat pump technology has been available for years. It has taken some time for large-scale projects to kick off in Germany. Hack said this is connected to the low fossil energy prices of the past. In Mannheim, the prospect of high carbon dioxide taxes, local climate targets, and state subsidies for the construction of the plant were decisive factors in the decision to switch to heat from the river. Now, though, by the end of his tour, he understands how it works, and his toes can still feel the impact of his dip in the Rhine River despite its thermal power. So that's a story there. Well, Germany's heat pump makers are looking to expand at home and abroad. So that's the future. Okay, so bear with me a moment here. I think that'll be the end of our day with the latest report. It's about 8 minutes to 12, so we're going to stop here. And thank you for being with us today, and hopefully you'll join us as well tomorrow. Take care and goodbye.